Tired of wandering the aisles at Walgreens trying to find the best deals? Well, we've got something that'll make your shopping experience a whole lot sweeter. Introducing Drop, the app that rewards you with free gift cards just for doing your everyday shopping. Whether it's groceries, toiletries, or your favorite snacks. With Drop, every purchase earns you points towards fantastic rewards. Download the Drop app now. Use code DROP55 when you sign up to get $5 in points.
Hi, everybody. It's Savannah Guthrie from the Today Show. As we head back to work, back to school, back to everything, we want to help you turn your to-do list into your today list. Your morning routine, healthy meals, and workout plans. We've got you covered so you can take it all on with simple solutions to help you through the day. Everything you need to know before heading out the door. So join us every morning on NBC because every day needs today.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Middle is supported by Journalism Funding Partners, a nonprofit organization striving to increase the sustainability of local journalism by building connections between donors and news organizations. More information on how you can support The Middle at listentothemiddle.com. Welcome to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson, joined by our house DJ Tolliver, who I can tell you right now is definitely addicted to his phone, but so am I, Tolliver. And I honestly don't know very many people who are not addicted to their
phones. Yeah, when I saw that this was the topic, I was like, oh, this is a personal attack. Jeremy's personally attacking me. I get it.
Well, you know, I just went on vacation for a week and I took all the social media apps off my phone. And first of all, I read 2 books and maybe 6 or 7 magazines, but also my screen time went down by a lot more than I would care to tell you. So that's what we are talking about this hour. And one recent survey found the average American spends 4.5 hours a day on their smartphone, and Americans in Generation Z are over 6 hours a day on average. And here's the thing, more than 40% of those surveyed want to cut down on screen time this year. So our question this hour, are you addicted to your phone? And if so, what are you doing about it? Tolliver, unfortunately, we have to use phones for people to communicate with us, but what is the number for people to call in?
It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or write to us at listentothemiddle.com.
Before we introduce our panel, people are still talking about the presidential debate that happened a couple weeks ago. And our show right after the debate brought in more calls than any show we've done. So here are a few more of the voicemails that you left us.
Hey, my name is Robert Schwabel. I live in Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, my name is Val. I'm from Chicago.
Hello, my name is Adam Burke. I live in Nashville, Tennessee.
My name is Helen from Ohio. Biden's handlers and his folks that, quote, prepped him for this debate completely screwed up.
I see no reason to change my plan to vote for Biden. The man I saw was an elderly man out after 9 p.m. I thought he handled himself as well as he could.
I feel like ageism in this country is a problem. I've been a big supporter of Biden, but I do have to say that his performance made me think that it wasn't just a matter of ageism.
We are now at a point in our politics where personal jabs are more important than the lives of everyday Americans. With 2 wars going on, our presidents have nothing better than to comment on their golf swing.
Well, thanks to everyone who called in. I'd almost forgotten, given all the news about the debate, that they did talk about their golf swings, and that was really weird when it happened. But you can listen to our post-debate show anytime because The Middle is available as a podcast in partnership with iHeart Podcasts on the iHeart app or wherever you listen to podcasts. So now to our topic this hour. Are you addicted to your phone? And if so, what are you doing about it? Let's meet our panel. Dr. Anna Lemke is professor of psychiatry and addiction at Stanford University and author of Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. Anna Lemke, welcome to The Middle.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And also joining us is journalist Johan Hari, who's author of many books, including Stolen Focus, Why You Can't Pay Attention, and How to Think Deeply Again. Johan Hari, welcome to you.
Hey, Jeremy, I should just warn everyone, it is 2 a.m. in London and I've drunk enough caffeine to kill a whole field of cows. It is possible I will die during this interview. I'm glad my last words will be recorded for posterity.
Oh, performance-enhancing drugs, I guess, are allowed on the middle. Before we get to the phones, Anna Lemke, do you think that what we're dealing with when it comes to phone usage is an addiction the way people get addicted to alcohol or drugs?
I think it's really reasonable and science-based to think of digital media as a drug. It lights up the same reward pathway as drugs and alcohol. It releases dopamine, our reward neurotransmitter. Just like with alcohol, the majority of people who use social media and digital media will not develop a severe life-threatening addiction. But I can tell you that in clinical care, we do see the subset of individuals, including very young people, who present with life-threatening addiction to digital media of all kinds.
And Johan Hari, do you think it's an addiction? And what are the consequences for society of a phone addiction?
Well, we're living in a huge crisis of attention and focus. The average worker now focuses on any one task for less than 1 minute. And for every one child who was identified with serious attention problems when I was 7 years old, there's now 100 children who've been identified with this problem. And there's some ways in which it's like an addiction. The core of that problem is, I would say to anyone listening, think about anything you've ever achieved in your life that you're proud of, whether it's starting a business, being a good parent, learning to play the guitar, whatever it is, that thing that you're proud of required a huge amount of sustained focus and attention. And when your ability to focus and pay attention breaks down, your ability to achieve your goals diminishes, your ability to solve your problems diminishes. You feel worse about yourself because you actually are less competent. And what I learned in the research from my book, Stolen Focus, you know, I researched it over 3 years. I went on a big journey all over the world from Moscow to Miami to Melbourne, not just to cities that begin with the letter M. I don't know why I just did that. And what I learned is there's scientific evidence for 12 factors that can make your attention better or can make your attention worse. And loads of the factors that can make your attention worse have been hugely increasing in recent years. Some of them are in our technology. They actually range pretty widely. The food we eat is really affecting our attention. Our lack of sleep, something I can relate to right now. The way our offices work, the way our kids' schools work, there's a really broad range of factors. But the key thing when you understand these causes is both, if you're struggling to focus and pay attention, as I was when I started working on the book, it's really important to understand this isn't your fault. This isn't your child's fault. There's nothing wrong with you. There's something wrong with the way we're living. But once we understand these 12 factors that are harming our attention, we can begin to defend ourselves and take on the forces that are doing this to us.
So Anna Lemke, how did we get here? Because I'm a millennial. I grew up in a time when there weren't even smartphones. We didn't do this. And then all of a sudden now we all spend so much of our day looking at these devices.
Well, these devices are very cognitively adherent. And by that, I mean that our brains collectively invented them and they are engineered to be attention grabbing, to be reinforcing. So you would be merely mortal if in engaging with these devices, you found it difficult to moderate your consumption. One of the interesting things for me is I feel like as a society, we have a lot more compassion now for people who have addiction to drugs and alcohol, possibly in part because we see ourselves getting addicted to devices in a way that we othered before. And now we're experiencing it ourselves, this kind of inability to cut back, a compulsive desire to use against our wishes, a degree of involuntariness, a narrowing of our focus, and most importantly, a continued use despite consequences. And it's just pervaded every aspect of our lives. I think, you know, 25, 30 years ago, we were only talking about the advantages of the technology. We were not considering the dark sides. So the good news is that we're having the discussion now.
It's interesting, though. I did see a Gallup survey that found even in the last couple of years, most Americans think that they get more benefit than negative out of their usage of their phone, which is kind of interesting. Let's see what some of our listeners think. Joy is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Joy, welcome to the middle. Are you addicted to your phone? Yeah, go ahead.
I absolutely am addicted to my phone, and it started gradually. But with with Twitter, actually, because you just keep going back and back. And I had to take the app off of my phone, but now I find myself unable to disconnect from my phone, from my emails, but largely it's like Instagram. I'll go on Instagram and say, oh, I'll be on there for 5 minutes, and I literally a half an hour later, I'll still be on Instagram, and I just don't know where the time went.
Hmm. And what do you think is the how did this start for you? Why have you gotten, and I'm not saying you, a lot of people are in the exact same boat, but why do you think that it happened for you?
Well, I disconnected. I was watching a lot of cable news. I'm kind of a news junkie to begin with, and I cut the cord a few years ago. And so from my perspective, the only source of that news addiction that I had was through my cell phone, through checking that Washington Post app, and through checking the New York Times and reading these articles and listening to them, and then going on Instagram for funny clips and that kind of thing. And it builds over time, and then you end up spending 5 hours a day just interspersed and trying to get your work done. But it's
hard.
It's very difficult
because
I've never been addicted to anything else before. And so this is a new experience for me, and I don't know how to get help for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joy,
thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Johan.
Yeah, I really feel for you. I was in a very similar position when I started working on my book. And I spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley interviewing the people who designed the apps that you're obsessed with, that I was obsessed with. And one of the things that most struck me is how absolutely sick with guilt they feel. They're really ashamed of what they've done. One of them is a guy called Dr. James Williams, who'd been at the heart of designing these apps. And one day he was speaking at a conference where the audience was literally the people who designed the stuff everyone is listening, your kids are using today. And he said to them, if there's anyone here who wants to live in the world that we're creating, please put up your hand. And nobody put up their hand. Not long afterwards, he quit. He's like, I can't take this anymore. So for all of the 12 factors that are harming our attention, obviously there's some aspects of our phones that I'm sure we're going to go into that are doing this to us. There are sort of two levels of which we've got to deal with it in a very practical way. I think of them as defense and offense. There are loads of things that you can do immediately to defend yourself and your kids, Joe. So I'll give you a quick example of two, although I go through many in my book. First thing I would say is you should go online and order something called a K-safe. It's just the letter K and then safe. It's very simple. It's a plastic safe. You take off the lid, you put in your phone, you put on the lid, you turn the dial at the top, and it locks your phone away for anything between 5 minutes and a whole day, however long you tell it to. And once you locked it, you can't get in, right? I use that 3 hours a day to do my writing. I would never have finished my book if I didn't have one. Another thing I would recommend is that you immediately download an app called Freedom. It's a very simple app. It syncs to both your laptop and your phone if you want it to. And it'll cut you off from either specific websites or the whole internet. So you mentioned Instagram and Twitter. You can just say to Freedom, do not let me use Instagram and Twitter for the next, say, 5 minutes, 2 hours. And the minute you've done that, if you try to use it, it just won't let you. Right?
We're going to get to some more solutions, but I do want to say, Tolliver, it is hard to talk about phone addiction without talking about the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Back in 2007, when Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, he promised to revolutionize the way we interact with our phones.
These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
Seemed like a good idea at the time, Tolliver.
Whoops.
By the way, if you are listening to this or you are looking at your iPhone, you can go on the podcast app and rate the middle podcast at the highest level and give us a nice review. That would be nice. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with more of the middle.
Attention parents and grandparents. Is your child struggling to ride a bike or ready to start? Meet Guardian Bikes, the easiest, safest, and quickest bikes for kids to learn on. Kids are learning to ride in just one day, no training wheels needed. What sets Guardian Bikes apart? Designed especially for stability, they're low to the ground with a wide wheelbase and ultra-lightweight frames, offering superior control and balance. This design gives young riders the ability to learn in just one day without tears or frustration. Guardian bikes are the only kids' bikes designed and assembled in a USA factory, ensuring top-notch quality and durability. They were also featured on Shark Tank and are the New York Times Wirecutter Top Kids Bike Pick for 2024. Join the hundreds of thousands of happy families by getting a Guardian bike today. Visit guardianbikes.com to save up to 25% off bikes. No code needed. Plus, receive a free bike lock and pump with your first purchase after signing up for the newsletter. That's guardianbikes.com. Happy riding.
Tired of routine Walgreens trips? Get rewarded for shopping with Drop. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards on groceries, gas, and more. Download Drop now and use code DROP55 to get $5 in points. Join Drop today.
Hi, everybody. It's Savannah Guthrie from the Today Show. As we head back to work, back to school, back to everything, we want to help you turn your to-do list into your today list. Your morning routine, healthy meals, and workout plans. We've got you covered so you can take it all on with simple solutions to help you through the day. Everything you need to know before heading out the door. So join us every morning on NBC because every day needs today.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show. We are focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. This hour, we're asking you, are you addicted to your phone? And if so, what are you doing about it? Tolliver, what is the number of people to call in?
It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also write to us at listentothemiddle.com or on social media.
I'm joined by Dr. Anna Lemke, professor of psychiatry and addiction and author of Dopamine Nation, and journalist Johan Hari, author of Stolen Focus. Before we get back to the phones, let's talk about some more solutions. Johan, you mentioned some, but Anna Lemke, what about things like using a dumb phone, a flip phone, or making your smartphone grayscale, taking away some of those dopamine triggers?
Yeah, I think those are all great things to experiment with. I like to think of those as self-binding strategies that allow us to just press the pause button between desire and consumption, giving us just a little bit of a break to reevaluate whether or not we want to continue to use. So Joy mentioned that she took the apps off her phone. Mm-hmm. Johan talked about using, you know, a kitchen safe where you lock it away. These are all different strategies. Grayscale is making the phone black and white, so it's not so potent on the visual system. What I find is that people are different, and they really need to experiment with different types of self-binding strategies.
I saw that Kevin Roos, who writes about tech for the New York Times, did something where he changed his lock screen to ask himself three questions every time he unlocked his phone. What for? Why now? What else? Which is great. Great from Kevin Roos. Yeah. Let's get back to the phones. And Brian, who's in Denver, Colorado. Brian, welcome to The Middle. Go ahead.
Yep. Warning, I'm not in the middle, actually.
Okay.
Which was the other end?
Okay. Well, what about your phone addiction? Are you addicted to your phone?
I don't believe I'm addicted to my phone. I believe I'm dependent on the use of my phone because it's technology and I need it for communication. And I think as a social psychologist, we would argue there's a big difference between dependency and addiction. So yes, addiction does create neurological situations, you know, dopamine, and dependency also creates situations with dopamine. But if I was addicted to alcohol, I would do everything in my power and seek everything in my power to get any type of alcohol fix because I can't do without it. But if my phone gets lost, I manage and I live and I until I get a new communication tool. Mm-hmm. But I don't go out and seek it and go out and just use any type. Like I have an iPhone, which you guys make fun of. I won't go and get a small flip phone or a burner phone to use like I would go and get any kind of little bit of alcohol to mm-hmm. drink if I have mm-hmm. an addiction to it. I'll take time yeah. and I'll not use the phone until I get an iPhone that I use because of my communications tool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brian, thank you for that. Johan, go ahead. Dependency versus addiction.
I think these things are a continuum, and it's about knowing that even for someone like Brian, who may not be as far gone as some of us have been, there's going to be a cost there. I'll give you some examples. Professor Michael Posner, who's at the University of Oregon, discovered something I think about every day. It's very simple. If you're interrupted by something as small as a text message, it takes you on average 23 minutes to get back to the level of focus you had before. So I could look at my text now, right? My phone is the other side of my laptop. You think, oh, it'll take me 5 seconds to look at my phone and reply, right? But bear in mind, it takes you 5 seconds plus the 23 minutes it takes you to refocus your mind. But most of us never get 23 minutes without being interrupted.
Right.
Another person who helped me to think about this, I went to interview one of the leading neuroscientists in the world, an amazing guy named Professor Earl Miller. He said to me, look, there's one thing you need to understand about the human brain more than anything else. You can only consciously think about one or two things at a time. That's it. This is a fundamental limitation of the human brain. The human brain has not changed significantly in 40,000 years. It ain't going to change on any time scale. We're going to see. But the average teenager now believes they can follow seven forms of media at the same time. So people like Professor Miller, they get people into labs, not just kids, older people too, and get them to think they're doing more than one thing at a time. And what they discover is always the same. You can't do more than one thing at a time. What you do is you juggle very rapidly between tasks. You're like, what did Jeremy just ask me? What does it say on the TV there about President Biden's messages at NATO? What is this message on WhatsApp? What does it say on Facebook? Right. Wait, Jeremy, what did you just ask me again? And it turns out that juggling comes with a really big cost. The technical term for that cost is the switch cost effect. When you switch between tasks, it comes with a cost. You're much less creative. You remember much less of what you do. You make more mistakes. So yeah, Brian may not be totally far gone. He's not the equivalent of someone in a dive bar in North Las Vegas who just can't get through the next 10 minutes without vodka. But you will be, if you're using your phone very heavily, incurring those costs throughout the day.
Hmm. Tolliver, I know that some messages are coming in online at listentothemiddle.com.
Yeah, we got a lot of them. Aliza from Northeast Ohio says, even though I'm not addicted, I feel badly for people who are on their touchscreen phones too much. I don't have one. Too many friends seem to have lost a sense of social obligation or basic courtesy. This wasn't acceptable before 2005. Stephanie from Birmingham, Alabama, where we're traveling soon, said we need to push for regulation of social media and other addictive apps to keep them from using addictive mechanisms such as auto-refreshing the feed, displaying posts out of order, and withholding posts during busy times. It would be easier to put them down.
Yeah, Anna Lemke, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the dopamine triggers, and we just heard there that comment about that sort of never-ending flow of information that makes you stay there and keep looking for more. How much control do we as individuals have over this versus these phone companies and tech companies that benefit, that make money the more time that we spend on these devices?
Yeah, you're raising a really important point, which is that we can have the subjective experience that we are choosing how and when and how much to interact online without perceiving the engineering, the invisible engineering behind the digital media that is really designed to hijack our reward pathways and keep us there beyond utility or even desire or joy in what we're doing. And those are things like autoplay, notifications, the endless scroll, the just incredible vivid imagery with music paired with narrative, the algorithms that follow us and learn what we've liked before and then push to us ever more potent versions of the same, which of course is how we then accelerate the addiction narrative, including things like tolerance, needing more potent forms of the digital media to get the same effect, which you could argue contributes to the kind of polarization we're seeing in public discourse today. I do, though, want to go back.
You think that contributes to the polarization?
I do think so. You know, this kind of intolerance for inability and intolerance for complex, nuanced discussions, coming up with complex solutions, the desire to really just want to get a hit of dopamine and see a more extreme video, a more polarized political debate, rather than really engaging with the ideas.
Let's go to Jaya, who is in Baltimore, Maryland. Jaya, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am definitely not addicted to my phone. I am actually someone who loves to be observant. I love to people watch. And what I see out there, not just in the U.S., but also globally, I find to be very disturbing. Our society has changed to a very large extent. I grew up in the 80s, and I remember being told to always, you know, sit away from the television, keep yourself right at a distance. And I think it's so ironic that now we've all become so accustomed to looking at a screen that's just 2 inches from our face. So I don't know how we got to this point, but it's very different. And I find that, you know, we're not considering our own safety. We're not considering the safety of others when we're using our phones. Many people take meetings from their car.
Right.
I think if we knew that that was going to be a behavior that was coming in the future, I think a lot of us would have denied it. You know, because it's somewhat absurd to me that we're multitasking in the ways that we are. I've been in public restrooms and I've been in a stall and have heard the person next to me
on their phone.
Taking a call on their phone.
Oh, watching a video.
It's becoming more and more common.
Yeah.
So there's no boundaries.
Yeah.
There's no boundaries. I was in. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Jaya. Let me take that to Johan Hari. Thank you so much for that call. Very interesting.
Yeah, what a lot of people, you're so right, Jaya, the bathroom thing really grosses me out as well. But you're totally right. What a lot of people who've been at the heart of the machine in Silicon Valley explained to me when I was researching my book, Stolen Focus, is why what you're describing is happening. And it's more fixable than you might think when you understand this dynamic. So if you open TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram now, please don't, but if you did, those companies begin to make money out of you immediately in two ways. The first way is really obvious. You see advertising. Okay, we all know how that works. The second way is much more important. Everything you ever do on these apps, including in your so-called private messages, is scanned and sorted by these artificial intelligence algorithms to figure out who you are, to figure out what makes you happy, what makes you angry, what makes you horny. And it's figuring that out for a very simple reason. It's figuring out what to show you next that will keep you scrolling. Because every time you open the app and begin to scroll, these companies begin to make money because you see ads. The longer you scroll, the more money they make. Every time you or your kid closes the app, that revenue stream disappears. So all of this genius in Silicon Valley, all this AI, all these algorithms, is geared towards one thing and one thing only, figuring out how do we get you and your kids to open the app as often as possible and scroll as long as possible. And I remember when the people at the heart of it were explaining this to me, I kept saying, oh, that sounds too simple. It can't be so obvious. And they kept saying to me, look, the head of KFC is, I'm sure, a very nice man or woman, but all he or she cares about in their professional capacity is how often did you go to KFC this week and how big was the bucket you bought, right? That's it. That's all they care about. In the same way, all these companies care about is how good did we get at undermining your attention and hoovering up as right. much of it as we can. And as my friend Tristan Harris says, you know, you can try having self-control, but every time you do, there are 10,000 engineers on the other side of the screen right. working very hard to undermine your self-control. And when you first hear that, it can be like, oh my God, well, we're just trapped in the matrix then. We're just screwed. But the key thing to understand is social media doesn't have to work that way. At the moment, it works on that model. The longer you scroll, the more money they make. But there are other ways it can work, and we can regulate these companies to get to that point.
We can, but haven't so far. Let's go to Kelly, who's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Kelly, go ahead.
Yeah, I love that intro. And the gentleman who is just speaking, I'm totally picking up what you're putting down. So I'm a full-time working mom. And I use the phone. I think it's interesting when you say you're addicted to your phone. Is it really your phone or is it the apps? So like for me, when I'm commuting in the morning or in the evening, I use my phone as like text to do something. So, hey, Siri, text so-and-so. And it helps me kind of keep up with my mom, my mom stuff while I'm like going to and from work. My kids, though, I want to set an example for my kids. And so I need to regulate my use of the phone and the use of the apps to be a model for them. And I think it's important, totally what the gentleman was just saying. I have developed, I'm not going to tell them, you can't use this. You have downtime. I want them to learn why and self-regulate or learn why to self-regulate, because of and teach them how these apps work and that they are after the money. Mm-hmm. All they want to do is have your advertisement, your eyeballs, and inform them so they can be like, hey, you know what? This is interesting, but I don't want to be watched. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be. I go through their apps and I say, hey, do you see this location setting in your apps? Turn mm-hmm. that off. And they get it. The reason why I want them to learn and be able to yeah. make an informed decision going through. Now, another yeah. thing is my daughter has ADHD. She actually relaxes and unwinds when she watches and does apps. So after a full day at school, the way she can totally decompress, uh-huh. and she needs to decompress having ADHD, is by just zoning out at some of these apps. So yeah. we allow her to do that for a certain yeah. period of time, but at the end of the day, you're done, you're going to play soccer, yeah. you're going outside, whatever, you know.
Right.
But
Kelly,
the one
Kelly,
thing that I did...
We've got it. Let me actually just bring in our guests. Thank you for that call.
Yeah.
You brought up an interesting point, and Anna Lemke, you know, you take that where you will, but I will just say we think so often about how this is a problem of the young, and the young people are addicted to their phones. We're all addicted to it. It's not just young people.
Oh, it's so true. In fact, I would say that among the elderly, we're seeing more and more consumption of digital media and being online more broadly, which is increasing social isolation among the elderly as well. You know, I think that Kelly brings up a really important point about parents needing to model what they want their kids to do. Often in clinical care, we'll see families that come in very concerned about their kids' consumption of digital media, but then in the middle of the session, they themselves will be texting or taking a call. So it really is true that our kids will, you know, they really will mimic our behaviors more than they'll listen to what we say. The other interesting thing that Kelly brought up, which is supported by the history of warnings about addiction, was that when kids feel like you're telling them that it's a drug and it's dangerous for them, they're not as likely to change their behavior than if you tell them, hey, this was made by corporations who are profiting off of you and trying to control you. So she's really smart and intuitive to use that message with her own kids.
Thank you. As Kelly, I totally agree with what Professor Lemke just said and everything she says, but the... I think as Kelly was speaking as well, she was talking about self-regulation and teaching that to her kids, and it sounds like she's doing that in a really wise way. And it was actually real worry about the young people in my life that led me to write Stolen Focus. But I also think there's another level of regulation it's really important for us to think about. If we want to solve this problem, I think there's an analogy, something moms like Kelly did not that long ago, that I think should really guide us now. So when we were kids, I think you're about the same age as me, Jeremy, the only form of gasoline you could buy in the United States was leaded gasoline, right? And it was discovered by scientists that exposure to lead was really bad for people's brains and particularly bad for children's ability to focus and pay attention. And if it's in the gasoline, it was in the air because it gets in fumes. Mm-hmm. Everyone was breathing in huge amounts of lead. So what happened was a group of ordinary moms, what at the time was called housewives, banded together and said, why are we allowing this? Why are we allowing these for-profit companies to screw up our kids' brains? Important to notice what they didn't say. They didn't say, so let's ban gasoline, let's ban cars, right? They got rid of the specific form of gasoline mm-hmm. that was harming our kids' brains. As a result, the average American child is 5 IQ points higher than they would have been. Hmm. We can do the same with tech. I can explain how.
You know, Tolliver, we've actually heard a lot of news recently about governors trying to limit screen time for young people in schools.
Yeah, and that's on both the left and the right. This is actually Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and New York's Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul with their thoughts on taking phones out of the classroom.
I think that they have every right to say, kids come in, just check your phone at the beginning, at the front of the room, leave it there. Learn and then grab your phone and then go after that. We don't want the kids on the phone the whole time while the teachers are trying to teach.
I've been sitting with teenagers in classrooms and in community centers, and I have seen firsthand the addiction that is going on. Our kids are being pulled in to a place that is often very dark.
Bipartisan compromise. Imagine that, Tolliver.
Rare.
You know, in Florida, they've actually done the ban in schools. In New York, it's so far just a proposal. We've also heard about California thinking about this as well. I imagine in the next several years, a lot of states are going to do the same mm-hmm. thing and make it so that students aren't able to use their phones in schools. We will be right back with more of The Middle.
Attention parents and grandparents. Is your child struggling to ride a bike or ready to start? Meet Guardian Bikes, the easiest, safest, and quickest bikes for kids to learn on. Kids are learning to ride in just one day, no training wheels needed. What sets Guardian Bikes apart? Designed especially for stability, they're low to the ground with a wide wheelbase and ultra-lightweight frames, offering superior control and balance. This design gives young riders the ability to learn in just one day without tears or frustration. Guardian Bikes are the only kids' bikes designed and assembled in a USA factory, ensuring top-notch quality and durability. They were also featured on Shark Tank and are the New York Times Wirecutter Top Kids Bike Pick for 2024. Join the hundreds of thousands of happy families by getting a Guardian bike today. Visit guardianbikes.com to save up to 25% off bikes. No code needed. Plus, receive a free bike lock and pump with your first purchase after signing up for the newsletter. That's guardianbikes.com. Happy riding.
Is getting gas at Shell burning a hole in your wallet? Get the Drop app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards just by filling up your tank. Download Drop now. Use code DROP88 to instantly receive $5 in points.
Hi, everybody. It's Savannah Guthrie from the Today Show. As we head back to work, back to school, back to everything, we want to help you turn your to-do list into your today list. Your morning routine, healthy meals, and workout plans. We've got you covered. So you can take it all on with simple solutions to help you through the day. Everything you need to know before heading out the door. So join us every morning on NBC because every day needs today.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. This hour, we're asking you, are you addicted to your phone? And if so, what are you doing about it? You can call us at 844-4-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. I'm joined by Dr. Anna Lemke, professor of psychiatry and addiction at Stanford and author of Dopamine Nation, and Johan Hari, author of the book Stolen Focus. Before we go back to the phones, I spoke earlier with a man named Tomas. We won't use his last name because he is part of a group called Internet and Technology Addicts Anonymous, which is a 12-step program to help people with their digital addictions. I asked him how much he was using his devices before he sought help.
So I found that they, first of all, found their way into every empty space in my life. On the train, when I was in line, it was really hard for me to be in silence. But I also would regularly, sometimes more than once a week even, fall into binges where I was using all night up until dawn. You know, I'd wake up the next morning, feel awful about it, and then start again. And I would ask myself, why am I doing this? And I just didn't understand.
So you decided to get into something called Internet and Technology Addicts Anonymous. What did they do for you?
I think the first thing they did was help me come out of isolation. I felt a lot of shame and embarrassment that I wasn't able to control my behaviors around my phone and my devices. In addition, I think what has been really powerful about this community is that it's helped me look at all of the underlying patterns, emotions, traumas, stresses that I was just not dealing with. Technology was a tool for numbing, escape, changing my emotions, feeling things I wanted to feel or not feeling things I didn't want to feel. Now it's a tool for living in alignment with my values, working on things that matter to me, connecting with people I love, and ultimately helping me live a more positive, flourishing life. So, you know, we're having this conversation because of technology, but what I don't do anymore is all of those behaviors, the games, the social media, the endless videos, the porn that really left me feeling awful afterwards. There's a lot of causes for suffering in this world, and technology doesn't have to be one of them. And if we're suffering because of our devices, that can change.
Tomas, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's Tomas's story. Anna Lemke, what do you make of that?
Well, just what a wonderful testimonial. And even sort of the cadence of Tomas's voice for me was quite calming. And I think speaks to somebody who is not in this constant reactive mode. Hmm. And it's so easy to get into when we're constantly reacting to these external stimuli. It's also true that many times in clinical care, people will come in not for help with addiction to digital media and their phones, but rather for depression and anxiety. And we find that it's their consumption of digital media that's contributing to these symptoms. And when they take a break from certain types of apps and reduce their overall time spent online, in some cases, depression and anxiety improves without our having to do any other intervention. Mm-hmm. So one of the soft signs of the harm of these devices is the insidious way they can contribute to anhedonia, or our inability to experience joy in anything at all.
Well, I hate to go to the phones on a show about phone addiction, but all the phone lines are full. So we're going to. Kay is in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi, Kay. Welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi. My ability and many's ability to fight their addiction is severe. Fighting your addiction has become a privilege. I am required by work, as many people, to use two-factor authentication. This means I can't use a flip phone. Most secure two-factor authentication these days are eliminating the ability to send just a text message. I have to have the app. Less people, but me and many others have to have Slack or something, or Teams on their phones, so their boss can contact them. Anyway, going even further, I can't install these addiction help apps, for example, going to Grayscale, limiting feed, because my company requires a mobile device manager. And God forbid trying to go to an addiction clinic, because that's my job. So how do you tell your employer, or how do we get employers to let people be healthy when they mandate your connection to your phone?
Yeah. Thank you, Kay. Yeah, go ahead, Johan. And by the way, Johan, I'll just say, I imagine that the pandemic made this a lot worse, as people were working remotely and having to be in contact in ways they were not before with their devices.
Yeah, Kay, you're right, Jeremy, and Kay is so right. And this is something I investigated a lot, and there's several things we can do about this, and I went to places that had done it. So the first thing I would explain is what happened in France. So in France, they were having a huge crisis of what they called le burnout, which I don't think I need to translate. And the French government, under pressure from labor unions, really important, would never have happened if labor unions hadn't fought for it, set up a government inquiry to figure out why is everyone so burned out. And they discovered one of the key factors was that 40% of French workers felt they could never stop checking their phone while they were awake. Never, because their boss could message them at any time of the day or night, like you're describing, on Slack or text. And if they didn't answer, they'd be in trouble, right? This is really recent. When we were kids, I mean, I don't remember my parents ever being contacted at home when they came home, right? You were at work and then you went home, right? The only people who were contacted at home when we were kids were doctors and the president. And even doctors weren't on call all the time, right? So this inevitably completely exhausts people in the way you're describing. So again, under pressure from labor unions, the French government introduced a very simple solution that has worked incredibly well. They introduced a law giving every French worker what is called the right to disconnect. Very simple. Your work hours have to be written down. And when your work hours are over, unless you're being paid overtime, you don't have to look at your phone, right? Very simple, massively improved people's attention. What you'll notice there, Kay, is that didn't happen because people went to their boss and said, hey, be nice to me. It happened because labor unions banded together and fought for it. Now, the truth is what your bosses are doing is bad for you and bad for them. There was a study by Hewlett-Packard, the printer company. They got a scientist in to study their workers, and he split them into two groups. The first group was told, get on with your task, whatever it is, you're not going to be interrupted by things like Slack. The second group was told, get on with your task, whatever it is, but at the same time, you've got to answer a heavy load of email and phone calls. The group that was interrupted scored 10 IQ points worse than the people who weren't, which is incredible. That's twice the effect of smoking cannabis, right? So it's really bad for them and bad for you, but you can make that case to your boss. But the truth is, you're most likely to make them do it if you form a labor union with your colleagues and you demand they do it. You fight together. You're not very powerful on your own, but you're very powerful when you stand with your other workers.
Let's go to Eli, who's in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Eli. Welcome to the middle. What about you? Are you addicted to your phone?
I do not carry a cell phone.
I haven't carried a cell phone since they invented the cell phone.
Wow. How do you get by in life in that way?
Very good. I have a landline phone. I have a computer. I have a voicemail. As a matter of fact, I'm a business consultant. And all my clients know I do not carry a cell phone. I think the cell phone is very damaging psychologically, emotionally, mentally, and physically.
Eli, thank you. That's a very interesting perspective. Anna Lemke, do you come across a lot of people who are like Eli and don't carry a cell phone even in 2024?
Not a lot. Many people for their jobs, as Kay was describing, are mandated to carry some version of a mobile digital device, if only for two-step authentication. But there's a lot of wisdom in not having a phone at all or leaving it off as a default mode, because the truth is once it's on our person and it's transmitting, part of our psyche is occupied thinking about what's going out and what's coming in. And if we were to analogize to drugs and alcohol, what's really interesting when we treat people with alcohol addiction is that if we give them a medication called Antabuse, which is a deterrent, they can't drink once they've taken the pill because they will get violently ill, they say that the craving entirely disappears. Now, this is a drug that doesn't directly target craving in any neurobiological way, mm-hmm. but just taking away the option means that they're not mentally preoccupied with having to think about whether or not they're going to use.
Let's go to Jim, who's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the middle. What about you?
Hi, I am not addicted to my phone. Now, I'm blind, so a touch screen is little or no use to me. And I refuse to share my personal information with people using voice commands. And, of course, that's a security issue, too. I'm an IT professional. I have access to a number of secure systems and have to deal with this dual authentication problem all the time.
So what do you think about all the people who can see and have become addicted to their smartphones?
Oh, I think it's very sad. I mean, I'm surrounded by them, right? In the IT world, everybody's looking on their phone and stuff. They can't pay attention. They don't have any courtesy, even like was mentioned earlier, at meetings or other times to pay attention to what's going on. It's really a terrible situation, I think.
Yeah. Jim, thanks for calling in. Johan Hari, what about the rudeness that he just brought up there, that people, you'll just be sitting at a dinner table and somebody just pull out their phone when they're bored by the conversation and check it.
Yeah, well, that's people who are being manipulated and trained to crave this kind of feedback. But I think it's connected, actually, the kind of lack of courtesy to something that both that Dr. Lemke and some of the people who texted brought up. You talked about the ban on schools having cell phones. It's really interesting. When they did that in Spain, the areas in Spain that did it saw a 20% fall in school bullying. And I think it connects lots of themes that have been coming up in this show. So it goes back to, remember I was explaining before, these apps, they're designed to keep you scrolling, right? They're machines designed to keep you scrolling. All they care about is how long you scroll, because they make more money the longer you scroll. They don't care about what they show you. They just care about the fact that you keep scrolling. So that all these algorithms are monitoring you the whole time, figuring out what keeps people scrolling. And they discovered an underlying human truth. It's been known about for a long time, that people will stare longer at things that make us angry and upset than we will at things that make us feel good. If you've ever seen a car crash on the highway, you know what I mean, right? You stare longer at the car accident than you did at the pretty flowers on the other side of the street. Mm-hmm. This has always been part of human nature, but when it combines with algorithms that learns what makes you angry, it has a terrible effect. So picture two teenage girls who go to the same party and go home on the same bus. And they both open TikTok to make videos. And one of them does a video going, "We had a great night. We danced all night to Ariana Grande. I loved it," right? The algorithms will pick up that video and it'll put it into a few people's feeds. Now picture another girl who goes, "Karen was a skank at that party." I don't know if kids still use the word skank, but just denounces all the other kids at the party, says they're awful, horrible. It'll put that video into far more people's feeds, because if it's enraging, it's engaging. You'll go, "What do you mean she's a skank? You're a skank." They'll have a fight, right? Now, that's bad enough at the level of two teenage girls on a bus. We all know what's happened to teenage girls' mental health. But now imagine a whole country Mm-hmm. Where the mean people, the cruel people are given a megaphone and pushed to the front, and the kind, decent people are muffled and pushed to the back. Except you don't have to imagine it, because we're living it, right?
Right.
Now, that is not sustainable over the long term for the mental health of all of us, but also for the survival of democracy, right? We cannot have a model premised on algorithms that privilege and promote rage and anger. And don't take my word for it. Facebook themselves, their own data scientists, discovered that they were actively promoting anti-democratic and rage-making forces. But it doesn't have to work that way. We can regulate these companies so they work in a different way. That's one of the big fights we've got to have now.
Let's go to Gab, who's in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Gab. Welcome to the middle. What about you? Are you addicted to your phone?
I can't say that necessarily that I'm addicted to my phone or not. I certainly spend a lot of time using it all day. But what I wanted to add to the conversation is that, you know, you guys were talking about how when our attention is diluted, it can kind of, you know, really affect our cognitive abilities in negative ways. But on the flip side of that, there's, you know, a tremendous tool, you know, a tool for learning. If we can figure out how to focus our attention, we can do amazing things that we were never able to do before. So like in my example, I was able to learn Spanish to a fluent degree within 3 years just by focusing my attention and using the tools that are in my cell phone.
Yeah. I learned some Greek. I learned some Greek. Metheno Elenika sto Duolingo. Okay, so I like that was my phone.
Don't speak Greek. You'll make me too excited. But that's a really interesting example. Duolingo. It's a great example, Gab, because Duolingo or those other apps are not designed around commercial algorithms that are designed to keep you scrolling. They're in fact based on a different business model, right? Which is one of the reasons why they have such amazing and productive effects for us. We can actually redesign the whole of social media so it works on the kind of algorithms that are used for Duolingo, and then they have much more productive purposes. That's the equivalent of like getting the lead out of the leaded gasoline, right? We can do that if we want to. Countries that have begun to push back on these social media companies demanding regulation, places like Australia, have won because we are so much more powerful than these companies. But to get there, to get to the point where we fight and push back against these companies and get to the positive effects that you're completely accurately describing, it requires a shift in psychology. We need to stop getting angry with ourselves and with our kids. And we need to start being angry with the forces that are doing this to us. And we need to realize we are not medieval peasants begging at the table of King Musk and King Zuckerberg for a few little crumbs of attention from their table. We are the free citizens of democracies, and we own our own minds, and we can take them back if we want to.
Anna Lemke, I'm going to give you the last word here as the hour runs out and ask you, if somebody's listening to this and they say, you know what, I am going to cut back on my phone usage, what should they do?
I would say the first thing is, as Tomas said, come out of isolation, talk to another human being about the behavior that you want to change. By giving it words, you will get more information and more awareness than you had before. And then I would say create a very specific plan for what apps you're going to delete or what websites you're no longer going to visit. Make some contingencies for how you can still do your work, communicate with friends and family, generally enjoy your life. And then I do recommend giving that app or that website or whatever that digital media is up for 4 weeks. 4 weeks is usually the amount of time it takes to reset reward pathways and come out of that addiction vortex and that state of craving, so that if you decide to re-enter into using that particular form of digital media, you can do so with a clearer sensorium.
Tolliver, we have time for a very short quiz for our guests. Go ahead.
I'll be quick. Okay. What percentage of Americans have their phone on them all the time? 87%, 42%, 64%, or 55%? Jump in when you're ready.
I can't have too much silence or all the
guesses,
silence alarms
please.
On the stations will go off.
We're supposed to guess.
You're supposed to answer, yes.
The highest one, the 87.
Yeah, that's my guess. It's 87%?
It's 64.
Oh, 64. Okay.
That's not too bad. Wow. We're better than we all thought.
I don't think people are being honest when they answer that. It's 87%.
There's hope.
Well, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Anna Lemke, professor of psychiatry and addiction at Stanford. Her book is called Dopamine Nation, and Johan Hari, author of Stolen Focus, Why You Can't Pay Attention and How to Think Deeply Again. Thanks so much to both of you.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you all.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
And Tolliver, next week is the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm. And we're doing a special show about what it means to be a Republican in 2024. If you're listening and you're a Republican, we want you to call us ASAP at 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. And leave us a message about what it means to you to be a Republican in 2024. Because of the schedule of the convention, next week's show won't be live, so we need to hear from you now in advance.
8444-MIDDLE. The Middle is brought to you by Long Nook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, Danny Alexander, John Barth, and tonight, Sam Burmistaz. Our intern is Annika Deschler. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Haig. Thanks also to Nashville Public Radio, iHeartMedia, and the more than 410 public radio stations making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and I will talk to you next week.
You slept through your alarm, missed the train, and your breakfast sandwich,
ugh,
cold. Sounds like you could use some luck.
I'm Victoria Cash, and Lucky Land is where people go every day to get lucky. At Lucky Land, you can play over 100 casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Go to LuckyLandSlots.com and get lucky today.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Make this new school year an opportunity for your kids to learn important life skills with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, while parents keep an eye on kids' money habits. Greenlight also helps families get into their fall routine with a chores feature that lets parents assign chores and pay kids' allowance when they check them off. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/iHeart. Greenlight.com/iHeart.